Last candidate for the day. Welcome, ma'am. Togna. Miss Togna. Is it Della Togna or Togna?
It's Miss Della Togna, sir.
Okay. Welcome to the panel. And please tell the panel about yourself and reasons why you want to be in the board of MDDA. And then we'll take it from there. Members will ask questions. You will share those questions with them. Questions and responses, 5 minutes. But for now, you will take 2 minutes to tell us about yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a great honor to be nominated for a position on the board of the Media Diversity Development Agency, and an even greater honor to be shortlisted and to find myself in front of the Portfolio Committee on Communications. My assumption is you've read through my CV and have had some feedback on my nomination and shortlisting. I've had an interesting career, an adventurous career, I like to describe it as that, and as a storyteller, as a community media activist, and as an advocate and practitioner in the public communication sphere, both locally and nationally. The community media sector is very dear to my heart, and it's a sector that really informed my entire career in the media space. Fresh from the student movement, I moved into the community media sector. I was part of the establishment and the transition of organizations like Bush Radio and the Community Video Education Trust from the point of them being anti-apartheid resistance organizations to community media training, fully functional stations in some respects. My time in the student media wing of the student movement in the late 80s and early 90s taught me some huge lessons about the importance of media freedom, media diversity. I remember being the editor of RCT newspaper, GCT, and having to even subject student media to state of emergency regulations, and that taught me the importance of a free and diverse media. So from the community media sector, where I've had some experience in community radio, community television, I moved into the field of storytelling. I've been a journalist, a print media journalist, but also this video medium, this particularly documentary filmmaking. My first film was called Community Eyes, and it was an expression of what community television could look like, the kind of models that South Africa could explore. It was produced in 1996 in response to the new legislation at the time that allowed for community television, community special broadcast licenses. Unfortunately, the commercials, some commercial players in the Western Cape had seen a loophole in the act at the time and had created something called Rugby World Cup TV and were given an ICASA license, special license to broadcast in the context of special interests. And we felt in the community media sector at the time that it was important to really interrogate what community television is and could be. Fast forward to 20 years later, I present you a portfolio of interesting documentary film work, which has explored history, important figures in this country's history. My emphasis has always been a collaborative one. I'm a producer, so I'm a facilitator of story. I'm not the one that owns the story. I've been privileged to work with a lot of fine documentary filmmakers in this country, and I have a real grasp on both content and platform. Later in my career, and after completing my master's in fine arts, and because of my deep interest in public communications and public participation and the space that interacts between the fourth estate, government, state institutions, and the media, I joined the parliamentary administration as its first multimedia manager. And I served in that position for 5 years, and I was part of some very innovative initiatives that introduced integrated marketing communications through all our platforms. Chair,
thank you.
I need to declare any issues in this session?
I was coming to that. You have a because we go through that process. We have a credit record of a very small amount. Is it what you're going to talk about? Talk about it, because it's in our report.
Yes, I think when you subject yourself to public processes like this, you must be honest and truthful. The last year and a half of my personal financial life has been challenging. The reason for that is because my contract with Parliament was not renewed, and it was a surprise to me that it wasn't renewed. And if you wish to know the reasons for that, it's been in the public space. I have no issues in explaining to you what happened, but so economically I have been challenged, and I've got a few traffic fines also that I need to deal with.
Don't speed. Don't talk on the phone. Members, that's Della Togna. Am I right?
It's Della Tonia, sir.
Tonia. Okay, members, can I start with you, Honorable Mandisha?
Okay. Good afternoon. Can we start here, please? Why did they not renew your contract? Was there anything wrong that you have done? Can we trust you now?
Thank you for that question. Sir, the nature of my suspension on the 14th of December was disclosed by Nehau in interviews with the media the following day. Essentially, I led an initiative by middle and line function management within the administration of Parliament to raise concerns about the way the Nehau senior management strike of November 9, 2015 was handled, 4 weeks into an unprecedented strike which saw violence and, in my view, bad faith negotiations between labor and senior management. A lot of us middle managers and junior managers felt that we weren't being consulted and we were caught between the rock and a hard place. I was suspended for writing a memo, for collecting signatures of members, and I was accused of media leaks. The investigation was never completed. My contract came to an end in January the following 6 weeks after my suspension. And essentially, if you look at it from a labor case point of view, so it's similar to what happened to William Borko of the SABC 8 journalists, where as a contract worker, you're vulnerable under the Labor Relations Act.
I think I understand. 2015, and trade union movement. Oh, interesting. Okay. Explain, MDDA. Okay. Your understanding, what it is. To achieve, etc., etc., meaning the primary functions.
Its critical functions are to support the growth of the community media sector. By the community media sector, I mean community radio stations, community print initiatives, community television. I think there's an opportunity to innovate in that space also, but I'll get to that later. It is also has a mandate to support small-scale commercial media to flourish. Its name refers to diversity in the media. It comes out, the MDDA exists because there was a recognition that within this country there wasn't a history of media diversity and ownership, and there was a very important need for voices that weren't being heard in the mainstream to be represented and to have ownership. The MDDA also has a mandate to research and be critical of media ownership in this country. It has a research function, which I think it hasn't fully harnessed. and ultimately, in terms of supporting the overall development of socio-economic development objectives of developmental states like South Africa, It is supposed to grow the industry. It's supposed to train storytellers. It's supposed to grow the platforms. And I think it has achieved a lot in its existence, although it's having some challenges at the moment, which I'd love to help to sort out.
Okay. No, thank you. Because obviously having worked in that kind of a situation, you will understand. So kindly take it further and indicate to the committee here the relationship between MDDA, ICASA, SABC. But that's very important.
It's interesting. ICASA is a regulatory body that issues broadcast licenses based in until now on a limited spectrum and with digital migration happening, it's going to have an even larger scope. So ICASA regulates who gets licenses, who doesn't in the broadcasting space and provides is a custodian of diversity in that sense, as a regulator, as an access point for deciding who has a voice, who has space on the spectrum or not. The SABC is the public broadcaster, not the state broadcaster, the public broadcaster. And as such, it has a national mandate, but it cannot purport to represent every single local community at every level. So, of course, stories of national interest are foremost. The NDDA, it also is supposed to be paying some money to the NDDA, and we need to look at that. The NDDA itself is there to interact with those institutions, but also the commercial media space, which is where dues should be paid in order to foster and grow diversity in the media.
Right now, SABC, for example, does not have money. I mean, apart from the people who are still there, as you know, of course, and I suppose you agree with me, the collection of money from people, etc., will you be able to help to do that? Just two sentences, that's why. So that the chairperson doesn't fight us and I'll stop there. I'm talking about licensing. Thank you.
In terms of drawing support from the SABC, a lot depends on the process it's going through at the moment in terms of strengthening its own funding base, but the NDDA has a similar challenge in terms of diversifying its funding field. It can't tap into just the SABC. Funding. It has to look at relationships that have broken down, for example, in the print commercial sector, to see why is it that the print commercial sector isn't paying its dues as legislated to do in terms of the Act and so forth to the NDDA. Why has there been a loss of trust? And also other sectors, by the way, the cinema distribution field, online media, why are they not, why shouldn't we be knocking on their doors to help meet a diversity in the same breath? So, that was 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Ndoze. Chair, we have 5 minutes. I've been So I get that you are very grounded in the industry. But you said that the MDDA has undergone a lot of challenges recently. What do you think those challenges are, and what must be done to resolve them?
Okay, there I think are three critical challenges that need to be addressed. The one is at the level of governance, the board. The senior management of the organization, from what I've read in the media and from what I've observed in the engagement with this portfolio committee, has been what one can describe as fairly toxic, and there's been a loss of trust between the board and staff and...
What must be done? That's the first challenge you might be confronted with when you get in. What must be done to resolve it? To detoxify the toxic relations of the two members of the board and members of management?
What needs to be done is a thorough investigation into what went wrong, together with some progressive solutions at every level. So number one is the appointment or the consideration this portfolio committee has on what happens to the board, an audit of projects that have happened, look at the business model of the MDDA, its APP, its plans, look if they are feasible or not, look at the governance environment.
Okay. I want to push a little bit because of the CV that you've presented. Now, I haven't met somebody who has made a very intelligible and practical intervention on funding. So advertisement relies on audiences, and it relies on specific audiences, audiences that can pay. So if audiences in Vembe cannot pay, you don't get, even if you've got audiences, you don't get money. So as a result, you are unable to be self-sufficient. What is your solution to this problem of funding, which many entities or many media initiatives suffer from?
I think there needs to be a sophistication, an adoption of the kind of tools that the formal advertising industry uses to recognize such audiences, to leverage the kind of media space that community media plays. Now, for example, if I use community television stations as an example, many of them are supported, and I say that in inverted commas, by one private entity that seems to play a role in both organizing their marketing space, their advertising revenue, but also has a huge influence editorially. Is that true community television? One has to look at those kinds of things. One has to really look at the funding models. Some community radio stations mirror the economic development of communities. And if there are bigger interventions in local economic development at municipality level, community radio stations, community multimedia stations really should be growing simultaneously. So I think it's not about taxing or putting pressure on...
Okay, so your solution is still advertisement-oriented. It seems to me that for a positive, robust, journalistic activity, one shouldn't be slave, particularly if you're going to do access to information, if you're going to be doing critical journalism. I mean, one of the big reasons why there is no critical journalism into the private sector is because most of the media is supported by adverts. Mm. So don't you see a contradiction that we are just replicating the existing problem? If we cast community media as well to adverts, go find your survival on the basis of attracting advertisements.
No, I'm saying using the tools that industry uses to dissect audiences and to attract different kinds of advertising, so local economic advertising. Small businesses haven't been harnessed enough to understand.
But isn't it that if you are mostly funded by government, the fear is you might be less critical of government. If you are mostly funded by the private sector, you are less critical of the private sector. So is there any funding model that breaks us out of that, out of advertisements and over-reliance on government, in your view?
I think if you look at international trends with community media in Australia and in other countries, I think it's a mixed funding model where you're not beholden to government, you're not beholden to the corporate sector, you're not beholden. There are many ways to raise funds, even in training and development, in sponsorship. The community media sector, in terms of that critical voice that you're referring to, that doesn't find a space in the private sector, is so important and actually does feed in and influence the private sector ultimately.
If we have last question, it must be the last question. Your time is up.
All right. I really need to push you on this, and I mean, it's not bad to say that you haven't really thought about it, because nobody is coming out very clearly how do we balance this. Majority of the papers that we visited them, majority of them in KZN and other provinces that are supported by MDDA, are not very critical of government. All their first pages is the premier or the mayor and all of that. Why? over-reliance on government funding. But the reverse is also true. Those who depend on private sector funding are less critical. They do less investigative journalism into private sector corruption. So is there a model? And if it is, give a practical example. Where else would the funding come from for self-sustainable journalistic publications, whether in radio or television or newspapers? Done, Honorable Chairperson. My last day. My last question.
And I'm honored to be the one to receive it. I think funding from various sources needs to be foundations. But ultimately, what needs to happen is that the protection of the editorial space needs to be as safeguarded as, for example, the disputes within the SABC's editorial space and its funding model. We've seen that tension there. So the MDDA should play a bigger role in dispersing funding in providing some kind of stability and in attracting the kind of investment in the sector.
I thought you were going to say we must pass a rule in a law in South Africa that this percentage of advertisement, yes or no, must go into community radio. None of you are saying that, which is not mandatory. They just have to do it. Whether they like it or not, which goes to a funding which supports media diversity. Otherwise, I think Chabiz, you must move to the next person.
Do you have anything to say?
No, I did say that earlier. I said other sectors of the commercial media need to be taxed. So even cinema screens and online digital commercial entities need to be taxed to allow the pool of media diversity funding to grow.
Thank you, Ms. Della Tonia. Am I right now? Thank you. Ms. Della Tonia.
It's Italian.
I'm not saying
Mr.
Miss. I can't mistake her with Mr. It's a Miss. Honorable Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chi. Thank you for making yourself available for the interview. I can see that you've got loads of industry specific experience, and some of the questions were not already posted to you, but specific with regards to digital radio for community media, why should we move to digital radio? That's my first question. My second question is, what is the role of the minister in relation to the board of the MDDA? And with regard to the recent media reports on the MDDA, do you think that the previous minister did a proper oversight role? Can you maybe elaborate on your take on that? And then I also want to mention, I see Lunku Mtinde, the chief executive of the MDDA, he was very consistently outspoken in his support for a media appeals tribunal, and I see that you've put him up for a reverence, as a reverence, and what is your position on a media appeals tribunal? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Van Dijk. In terms of, I might not get your questions in sequence. I've almost forgotten the first one. I was concentrating on your last ones. Mr. Mtinde is a reference on my CV because we've known each other from many years back, and he's aware of my community media experience prior even to his appointment on the role of the MDDA. His views on the media tribunal are his views. My views differ, and I would be comfortable to have a debate with him or anybody else about that. I do believe that there needs to be freedom of speech. I do believe there needs to be diversity of speech. Of course, it has to be managed. Things like hate speech are intolerable, and I do think that we need to just keep woke, be vigilant of, especially in these days of for news, false media, and so forth. I mean, it's a very interesting time in the media space to be alive, and that's why I feel so passionate about the role of the MDDA in that regard, in strengthening alternative diversity of voices that cross an ideological spectrum and a geographical spectrum and a community of interest spectrum. I think that's what community media is all about. In terms of the role of the former minister, I think that I can't really comment on that. I don't know her personally. I don't know what the story is. What I do know is the challenge that we have with the MDDA currently didn't happen overnight, and it's going to take some time to resolve at the level of board, at the level of the executive. There are way too many vacancies in the organization of a strategic importance, and the challenges this institution is going through mirror the challenges other institutions are going through. And given its critical nature, I think it's time to roll up one's sleeves and clean up ship and strengthen the sector in the interest of democracy and in the interest of particularly rural communities that are disadvantaged still 23-year post democracy into our young democracy. There's a lot of work to be done still. And let's not forget that the community media sector plays a crucial role in influencing the private media sector as well. I mean, a lot of journalists come through the ranks of community media sector and are influential. I think is that...
There was still one question on the digital radio. Yeah,
that's the nice one. Yes, I believe in digital everything. I believe that we need to go beyond the old school, you know, community radio, community media construct. I mean, it's something I implemented in Parliament as well, that radio needs to be used effectively and that what you produce can be published online, so why not? I think it's the best way to grow audiences. If you look at what community TV stations have been doing, they've also been using any platform available. I don't think they've used online digital enough. They've used existing private digital channels to just extend their reach. I think I'm very excited by when digital migration really takes into effect and the public broadcaster and other entities can really start sharing a huge bouquet of channels for community radio. The opportunities will be endless, and communities that haven't been covered and haven't had access even to mainstream public channels will suddenly be having access to everything. So I'm very passionate about, and the expenses around converting or amplifying a traditional community radio station and bringing it online are minimal. So the access and the opportunities are endless.
Thank you very much, Honourable Fonde. Honourable Kalago.
Thank you, Chair. I understand. Welcome to the interview. I know your passion on media. Look, I want to go to probe more, because our problem is funding around community media and TV. Do you think government should, instead of this volunteerism or voluntary basis, that the big four have a share of funding which they throw into MDDA, which some of them have long withdrawn it? Do you think we should legislate that a certain percentage, which it must be a must? And secondly, what is your opinion? Because immediately when the new government started, after we finished, of course, ICASA Act and Broadcasting Act, we started to come with all these methods of trying to transform the media industry. Immediately, the big four occupy the space. I think that's what kills the community media. Even in the radio now, they are doing that. In fact, there were even attempts when SABC was running mad to buy its radio stations. Do you think that is not what is stifling? Because if you go, just take Cape Town, Western Cape, you go to any township, there are these community papers that are dropped free all over, even in the suburbs, either by independent media, either by Media 24, either in all the townships and in all languages. So do you think is not that what stifles MTTA or government from its efforts to come with this diversity in media.
Thank you, Honorable Kalakwa. You know, I tend to agree that actually legislating a tax on commercial media might not be a bad thing to enforce and bring to life media diversity and to hold that industry to account. Of course, that comes with huge responsibilities around how to use the money. There is a huge amount of money there, and the percentage that has been paid over by those big four and so forth is very small in comparison to... And the irony is that very sector benefits from community media. As I said earlier, the many, many of the journalists, producers, presenters, icons that are used and that make the commercial media so popular have emerged from the community media sector. So in a sense, it's, if you look at the cycle of investment and development in the fourth estate as a whole, public, commercial, and community, there's a synergy there. So there's an interest even, and I believe that there's a way of making the business sector and the private sector see the sense in paying the money.
Secondly, now coming to government, because those, I think we do contribute also, because you'll find local municipalities, when they advertise, they want to advertise on Sunday times. I don't know what they are advertising for whom. They won't go to a local TV station there and advertise. Same thing, provincial departments, including Premier's office going down. We find the same. Don't you think a government, especially department governments, or from all three tiers, we must actually, if something regulated, that there is a marked certain percentage of that, because at the present moment, it's just for, if you want, you do it, if you don't. And in fact, earlier, somebody alluded to it. When they want to go to community media, they wanted free space. All these departments, all these ministers, they are holding a bill in the township there. There's a community paper. They wanted free coverage. So what is your take on that?
No, thank you. Something I'm very interested in and have had direct experience of. GCIS nationally has had an interesting model. They had a 30%, you know, with their advertising budget, they had a policy that 30% of it gets spent on community media, community radio particularly. And I remember when I joined the Parliament administration, I introduced a similar practice. It wasn't a policy, it was a practice, because the policy environment had to consider that. I recognize the problem that you're describing very well. Even in this institution, there's a tendency to go for, you know, commercial media or so forth, and or not understand the value of community radio, for example, as an audience space. I mean, I'm not sure if you realize that the combined audiences of community radio stations around the country reaches into the over 8-9 million listeners. Community television is huge. It's combined audiences. I mean, I'm not saying it can compete with the SABC or other private broadcasters in terms of their access, but certainly it's a considerable audience. And I think government officials, government communicators need to be educated in how they allocate media spend. And government is influential in that, and GCIS knows how to do this. It must just embark, and MDDA can challenge and lobby and advocate for firm policy to be taken, a firm policy position on how you spend your money. And the best approach, really, because is it of value for you to be, for example, if one of the members or the chairpersons of committees at Parliament gets placed on a radio station that doesn't, you know, where the subject matter doesn't relate to its audience, and what is the point? There's a lot of miss and match. We need to tighten up on our media buying and strategy side.
Thank you. Anything to ask to members?
Does the committee foresee a legislative review of the MDDA Act or any acts relating to the functioning of the Media Development and Diversity Agency? I'm interested to know.
We surely we haven't looked at that. You know that the only act that we have looked at is the Broadcasting Act that we are dealing with. On MDDA, maybe something that we need to look at. Thank you.
No, other than that, I'm clear on the role of the board, I'm clear on the role of the organization, I'm clear on the role of this portfolio committee and its accountabilities, and thank
okay.
you.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much for your contribution. Your question, we'll have to look at it. Thank you. That's the last candidate, members. You may leave, ma'am. She may leave. What is the problem for us, members? Because we must break for dinner, we requested to shift from 6 to 1. But we have a serious problem of deadline of our report. I'm told the deadline is 7 p.m. for it to go through. But if we meet 7, it may be circulated in the House. So we have that problem. We'll take the last option because we must do our work in terms of the deliberations. The difficult part of the deliberations, not more about the body of the report, the three names. That's the difficult part of it, because those three names we need to finalize here. Unless you are ready to give us the three names. Honorable Kalago?
Chair, these candidates, unlike others, they were actually picking themselves. I think we can throw names and finish and get over with it.
Yes.
Ready?
If
yes.